You're listening to the State of Women Radio Network, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on women and girls, with your host, Michelle Jaffe.
Welcome to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are so glad to welcome our guest on the show today, Mary David, who is striving to change the conversation about human trafficking, not only in the United States, but all around the world. She's doing some incredible things with policy and bringing about awareness about human trafficking and other human rights issues. So this is going to be a fantastic conversation that we'll be having today. So Mary, I'd like to welcome you on the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you, Michelle?
Very well. And once again, we're just so excited to have you on our show. And we've talked to some guests before about human trafficking. And I really think that these conversations, you know, are so important to our listeners, because sometimes we don't realize how close this issue can hit home. So just on some background, I'd like to know when you first began your work on human trafficking and other human rights issues.
For me, this journey with uncovering human trafficking, really exposing it and trying to highlight it to as many people as possible, started with meeting a trafficking victim in Cyprus. I met her actually when I went to study abroad, and I picked a study abroad program in Cyprus like any other college student that was just looking for a great experience where they would learn a lot and get to understand the culture and assimilate into it as much as you can in a study abroad program. And what I discovered when I got there was that the lowest class of society in Cyprus was made up of the foreign domestic workers, who were primarily from Sri Lanka and the Philippines. And what I didn't know when I got there is that those workers are severely discriminated and mistreated. And because of my features, people would often think that I was a domestic worker, and they were very rude to me. I would get kicked out of restaurants, accosted on the street, physically threatened. And when I tried to report anything to authorities, it just really didn't receive any attention. And so I wondered, what are these workers going through inside the home if this is how outwardly the problem is dealt with and minimized? And so from that, I started to speak with domestic workers. I met one from the Philippines who just opened my eyes up to the atrocities that often accompany domestic workers who look for employment outside of their country, but beyond that, also that many of them are trafficked.
Wow, so that's very profound that you were actually in a situation where you were almost in the shoes of someone who received that kind of treatment. And that must have just been, like you said, a crazy eye-opening experience, because, when you're coming from the United States, sometimes you don't realize that this stuff is actually, you know, reality. And if you go someplace and you were treated like you were part of that situation, that must have been, insane.
I've never experienced anything so blatant in the U.S. before, at least personally. I have heard stories of people who have been profiled and, you know, had other things happen to them in the U.S., but me personally, I hadn't experienced that. So to go abroad and just come with this open mind about exploring a new city and a new country, and to get that kind of experience, it was really hard, and I was embarrassed. I took on blame that I shouldn't have, and that often accompanies, the experience when you do get treated in these ways. And I know from working with victims of trauma that, you know, a lot of what I went through at the time was me kind of processing this situation and in some ways, you know, just trying to compartmentalize and look for other ways to sort of go beyond that experience and to find good from it. And thankfully, I was able to find that and able to really have that situation move me into a space that's, you know, it's changed my whole life and changed it for the better and put me in a place where, yeah, I can understand, you know, what a lot of these workers are talking about. And a lot of the domestic workers, you know, they experienced a lot of sexual exploitation as well. And so when they would talk about the, you know, the shame that they would, you know, feel from people on the street or just going out and trying to live a normal life, in some ways, obviously my experience was not nearly as traumatic as theirs, I was still able to relate to them in a way that I never could have had I not been through
absolutely
that.
Absolutely. And I'd like to remind our listeners that if you are just now listening, you are listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. We are talking with Mary David and about the topic of human trafficking. And Mary, I'd like to shift the conversation about talking about this issue and how it not only impacts countries around the world, it impacts America. And, you know, it's common knowledge that in the 1800s, you know, the 13th Amendment was passed in America that abolished slavery. But how present is slavery in America to this day?
Oh, gosh. Well, it's actually a huge problem here in the U.S. And I'm glad you brought that up, because oftentimes when we hear about human trafficking, we think of it as something that's going on in other countries and don't realize that it is actually happening here as well. Now, numbers on trafficking are difficult to really assess because, first of all, victims don't often self-identify as victims of trafficking. There's still a huge knowledge gap in terms of what it is and people wanting to put that information forward and also people even realizing, okay, this is not my fault and this is not just a bad situation that I threw myself into, which a lot of times is a mentality. But within the U.S., I mean, the numbers that we have, for example, of when you look at sex trafficking, and particularly of minors, the estimate is between 100,000 and 300,000 children within the U.S., and the number of children at risk, of American children at risk of child sexual exploitation, is roughly 244,000.
Wow.
And, yeah, and when you do the breakdown of you know, labor trafficking and sex trafficking, it's been difficult to quantify. I mean, the breakdown what the Department of State has put out has been that 60% of victims are children and women, and 40% are men, and that 70% of it is sex trafficking and 30% is labor trafficking. But again, that information is always being updated, and we're getting new information about it constantly. So, again, you know, the numbers do change, and estimates in terms of trafficking more broadly, outside of sex trafficking, are in the range of 3 million in the U.S.
Wow. Now, I know our listeners have probably heard the term human trafficking, but what are some of the misconceptions involved with this type of crime that they may not know about?
Sure. So a lot of times, because when people hear the term human trafficking, they think that this encompasses some sort of movement that's required, so people crossing borders or crossing state lines. But in actuality, the most key component of trafficking is the exploitation side. So someone being coerced or, you know, manipulated into a situation where they are being exploited for either labor, sexual services. And so a person can be trafficked without ever leaving a home. So there could be, you know, someone who is in one room that never leaves that room. And oftentimes this does happen with victims where they're not even allowed to you know, walk outside of that floor, that apartment, and they are trafficked just from within that one place. And this is even a problem with, unfortunately, with parents who, or adults who are close to children that traffic them. And so it can very easily and does easily happen with people who are within one community or one small geographic location.
Mm-hmm. Now, when we get back from our break, we're going to talk more about trafficking and, Mary, the work that you're doing to fight the issue of human trafficking in America and abroad. To all of our listeners, we want you to connect with us by going to facebook.com/womaninvesting or on Twitter, be sure to use the hashtags womaninvest, #girlsinvest, or #weforshe. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the State of Women Radio Network, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on women and girls.
Welcome back to Women Investing and Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are going to continue our conversation with our guest today, Mary David. Before we went to the break, we talked about trafficking and how human trafficking is present in America, even to this day, 2015. So we're going to go right back to what we're talking about, Mary, and I want to shift the conversation now about prevention and about your work with prevention of human trafficking, specifically with young women and girls. Now, what are some of the telltale signs that trafficking is occurring, and what does one do if they identify that trafficking is going on?
Well, with children especially, and if you're talking about young women, some signs to look for are an older boyfriend or someone who is a new person in their life who is either coming off as maybe a parental figure or a lover boy, they call it, or an older boyfriend who is suddenly supplying this person with a lot of gifts and attention and taking them out, and someone who has a background that, you know, is not really known to the victim's family members or friends.
Mm-hmm.
So, and said a lot of times, you know, victims are targeted if they don't have a good support network around them. If they have low self-esteem, and traffickers really look for the children who are the loners, who are the outcasts, who don't necessarily have a lot of close family and friends that are paying attention to them, because they see that this is someone who's vulnerable, someone who is needy, who's looking for a void to be filled in their life. And they try to fill that void initially with love and with attention, or what they claim to be love and attention. And then that quickly changes.
Right.
Some other signs to look for, I mean, children who come from, and women too, young women who come from, you know, a turbulent family situation, child abuse and child molestation is highly, highly correlated with domestic minor sex trafficking or sex trafficking of Americans. And oftentimes traffickers will use their exploitation in terms of the ways that they've been traumatized, these children and these girls, to then make them even further traumatized and put them in a situation where they're just blaming themselves for what's happening to them and going back to the guilt and the shame that they've associated with from prior experiences. Traffickers will often go to bus stops or playgrounds, the shopping mall, to scope out, you know, potential victims. So children who are, you know, maybe at an airport or at a bus station or a train station and, you know, have just run away from home. Runaways are actually often approached within 48 hours. One out of three children will be approached by a trafficker in the U.S.
Wow.
So that's definitely something to look for as well. New gifts from, you know, a stranger or someone in the person's life. Any signs of, depression and any kind of, past trauma, like I said, will also be triggers that the traffickers look for. And so if a girl is suddenly spending all of her time with this other person, that's also a sign. And having multiple cell phones, because often victims do, and their traffickers will only want to contact them on the other cell phone. So
that's interesting. So that's another sign. You know, Mary, I want to touch on that point with talking about vulnerability. And sometimes, girls in their young teenage years, they tend to be more vulnerable, less confident with themselves. And I know that you've talked before of some of the methods that traffickers attract young women and girls, like you just mentioned, and bus stops or airports or some other public places. And I think you mentioned also that sometimes it can be as simple as giving them a compliment and testing, gauging their vulnerability to see if it's someone that could be, vulnerable enough to go with them. So how can young women and girls combat this? Is there a way that their parents can get involved and teach them what to do in the situation?
Yes, absolutely. It is so important for young women and girls to have a healthy sense of support from the people in their life, people who are building them up and telling them things about their worth and their beauty. Unfortunately, a tactic that traffickers often use is to tell a woman that she's beautiful and see if she responds with confidence. And if she does respond with confidence, then they move on and they think that, okay, this is probably not a good target. But if the woman or girl doesn't seem sure of her beauty or doesn't seem to have a lot of confidence, then they are attuned to saying, okay, well, now this is someone who we may be able to exploit.
Mm-hmm.
So having a healthy sense of self and really reinforcing to our women and girls that they are beautiful, that they do have worth, that they should see themselves in these ways, and getting them involved in extracurricular activities and things that will help build those support structures around them is so key. I think also just a sense of awareness that this really can happen to, the people in your community and in your neighborhood, and that this isn't just an issue that is dealt with, in some other city or some other country, and taking those blinders off. The National Human Trafficking Resource Center has a hotline that you can call if you suspect something. You don't have to be sure about it, but if you think that there might be a case of trafficking, that something could be going on, if you just get that sense, then you can call the hotline and they can look into it for you. So that number is 1-888-373-7888.
Excellent. And if you're just now tuning into our show, you're listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. We're talking with our guest today, Mary David, about human trafficking. Now, Mary, you just mentioned the hotline to call if there is, if you see that there might be human trafficking or some other act like that going on. And once again, the number is 1-888-373-7888. And now some people are afraid to report various incidents because they're unsure if what they're seeing truly is the real deal. They don't have enough facts to support it. But what would you say to those people who are feeling like they don't want to get involved? They don't feel comfortable.
I would say that it is absolutely worth it to try to just put the report in, the tip in. If you suspect something, you could literally save someone's life. And that to that person whose life is on the line, that it could make a difference in whether they live or die. It could make a difference in terms of how they spend the next few years of their life and what kinds of experiences they encounter. So it's okay to be unsure, and it's okay to not have all the answers. That's not, you know, that's not the standard. And we seem to be pretty good at saying, okay, well, I think there may be child abuse going on here. Let me report that. And it's that same sense that we need to take with us when we're looking at issues like human trafficking.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's also important that you talked about the different signs that maybe parents can see in their own children and see if there's something suspicious going on. And of course, to encourage them to investigate, you know, the situation to make sure that their children are safe or that their children's friends are safe or what have you, just to make sure that we can really work to the prevention of human trafficking. Now, when we get back from our next break, we're going to talk more about Mary's involvements in prevention of human trafficking and generating awareness, but then also using other ways to fight this issue. Now, for all of our listeners out there, remember, we want you to connect with us. Tell us what you think about our conversation and maybe some of your experiences with this topic. Go to facebook.com/womeninvesting and comment on there, or you can go on Twitter and use the hashtag womeninvest, hashtag girlsinvest, or hashtag weforshe. Once again, we'll be right back. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the State of Women Radio Network, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on women and girls, with your host, Michelle Jaffe.
Welcome back to Women Investing in Women and Girls, and you are going to listen into our conversation today with our guest today, Mary David, who is working towards the prevention of human trafficking in America and around the world. And prior to the break that you just came back from, we talked about the nature of trafficking, some different signs that you can look out for, as well as the helpful hotline that you can access if you do see a situation of human trafficking. Once again, that number is 1-888-373-7888. Now, Mary, you have worked so hard towards the prevention of this issue, and now I want to talk about some of the involvements that you are in, the first one being Priceless. So if you can explain what this campaign is and how does it differ from other efforts to create awareness about trafficking?
Priceless is an organization that uses arts and media to combat sexual exploitation and human trafficking. And really what stands out about this organization is the fact that it is utilizing media as a powerhouse through which we can actually fight back against the issue in a way that anyone who knows nothing about trafficking can still be affected and still be part of the dialogue and part of the conversation, because it's really about changing our understanding in terms of cultural norms and just the ways, the subtleties in how we look at these issues. So through the use of film and dance and through media, whether that be, you know, a photo campaign or an arts exhibit, Priceless is very committed to just highlighting not only the situation that victims are in, but also the sources through which they can get the hope to really see that there are avenues to help them get out of those situations. And beyond that, it's also to reach audiences who may not know anything about trafficking when they hear that term, but they really can connect with the idea of someone who is really broken, who has been through something horrific and is rising above that situation and overcoming that. Mm-hmm. So Priceless really just has a broad scope in terms of its reach.
Right. Now, when I was investigating Priceless, what I found was most interesting is that I feel like the way that it's conveying its messages through art platforms and through different ways through media, you're conveying a message that is similar to other campaigns to try to bring awareness to human trafficking, but in a way it's also changing the conversation about it because you're using different ways to convey that message. And I think that's something that is very interesting. It's very intriguing, and I think that it's definitely going to attract more people to this message by using art and more visual aspects of the issue, correct?
Yes, and I'm so glad that you mentioned that because, you know, oftentimes a dialogue about trafficking, that will draw a certain kind of audience, but someone who just sees an image that is captivating, that's beautiful, that's powerful, that really doesn't come with, and you don't have to have any certain background or understanding of the issue, and everyone will take something away from that. And so that's what Crazy has really tried to be, artistic and edgy and outside of the box. So some of the elements, you know, we know are a little abstract, but we embrace that and we see all of that as because we are artists, as part of the beauty of expression and allowing people to engage in the image or the art in whatever way speaks to them.
So what is your role within Priceless?
So I have been serving as division director for the past year, and in that capacity, I have just been helping in terms of communicating the idea of Priceless, what we stand for, and all of the media messaging to potential networks and partners, donors, communities. I also help to produce and starred in a film that we shot, a film short on the trafficking of a young woman in the U.S.
So,
excellent. Yeah, it's been a really great adventure and ride.
Now, if you're just now listening, you're listening to Women Investing, Women and Girls. We are with our guest today, Mary David, talking about Priceless, an organization that she is working in. And we are now going to talk about the film that she just mentioned called The Ninth Hour. If you can tell us a little bit more about this film and the purpose behind the creation of such a film.
Yeah, so we worked on Ninth Hour really to combine these elements of theater and dance and artistic expression with the story of a girl who has been trafficked, who is relatable, who's, you know, a college-age girl born and raised in the U.S. and found herself in this situation. And, you know, in a lot of ways, she's a girl you could see yourself, you know, having lunch with or being in one of your classes, or that you may have seen even if you weren't friends with someone that you could see in your life. So mm-hmm. we really wanted to bring awareness to the idea that this is something that's happening here in the U.S., and so that was a big part of it. And also, we did this in conjunction with a church, and so there's a faith element to that. And a lot of victims, not all, but many survivors of trafficking, they do identify with a story of healing that involves a faith element. And so that's included as well. But the story is really about resiliency and triumph.
Excellent. Now, where can our listeners access this film?
It hasn't been released yet. We did a few premiere screenings out in the Midwest, but it will be out most likely in April of next year. And for further information on that, you can check out my Facebook page because I will definitely be posting about it. Mm-hmm. And so my Facebook page is www.facebook.com/public.figure.MaryDavid. And you can also go to my website, which is not up yet, but it will be after next month, and that is www.sheismarydavid.com.
You love it. We absolutely encourage our listeners to go and check those out. Now, Mary, you're also involved with something called Free to Be You, and this is a TV series, which I find is very intriguing as well. If you can tell us about your involvement in this program.
Sure. So Free to Be You has been this great experience of putting together a show that is part performance-based and part talk show-based. And what we do is we bring in guests to talk about human trafficking and issues that are related to trafficking. So anything from homelessness to poverty to domestic violence, and discuss how they have used challenges in their life to create some sort of positive impact and social change. And the guests really range in terms of, you know, the experiences that they bring with them and the performance aspects that they choose to share. And in the performance side, it just allows our guests to dive into their topic or their passion, their specialty in a different way to just attract maybe a different audience or just to engage audiences beyond, you know, conversation, because there's so many ways that we can make an impact through media.
You know, I think that's amazing. The fact that these women are able to share their stories, and I know that must be very difficult for people who have gone through difficult situations, and it's very inspiring even to those who have gone through similar things to see someone who is strong and resilient and is able to come back from, you know, an experience like that, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it is so encouraging for anyone, really, but especially when you've been through something traumatic, to then see someone who has gone through that and is able to speak about that with such composure and such bravery and such poise. It shows you that it is possible to rise not only out of that situation, but above that situation and build on it to create something that's positive, that's beautiful, and that's affirming.
Right. You know, Mary, what you're doing is so inspiring and so incredible. And we have more to this conversation. We come back from our next break, so don't go anywhere. Remember to connect with us by going to facebook.com/womeninvesting or use the hashtags womeninvest, #girlsinvest, or #WeForShe. We also encourage you to follow up with Mary. You can go on Twitter and look up the Twitter handle @freetobe. Or use the hashtag NPRINT, N-P-R-I-N-T, NPRINT. So we'll be right back. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the State of Women Radio Network, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on women and girls.
Welcome back to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, with our guest today, Mary David. And we are talking about the topic of human trafficking in America and abroad. And before we went to the break, we talked about Priceless and Free to Be You, two ways that Mary is working to combat the issue of human trafficking. Now, Mary, once again, I'd like for you to let our listeners know how they can learn more about Free to Be You, where they can find it, as well as Priceless. What is the website that they can check out?
So for Free to Be You, the best place is to go to our YouTube page and subscribe to our channel, which is www.youtube.com/user/freetobeutv. And our Twitter handle is @freetobeutv. And the show actually airs in the D.C. area on Wednesdays and Saturdays on Comcast Channel 69 and Verizon 38. And then for Priceless, Priceless actually has its own website, and that's theyarepriceless.com. And Priceless also has a Facebook page, which is also They Are Priceless.
Awesome. So once again, be sure to check out those two websites and to go on YouTube and also subscribe to Free to Be You. There's some excellent discussions going on there as well. Now, Mary, you've also done a lot of work with policy, and specifically, you earned a very incredible title as well. You were named a top 99 under 33 foreign policy leader. So what was that like to receive that honor?
Oh, that was such a humbling experience. I was so, so thrilled and excited and just felt very blessed to receive that award. They're nominees for it are unbelievable. And I just, you know, I really attribute that to having people in my life who have encouraged me and pushed me forward and really helped me to achieve what I have and have the opportunity to take on these different roles that led me to that.
That's wonderful. And now we're going to talk about some of your past involvements with policy and some of the things that you're continuing to work on. And they're all, once again, they're just amazing different things that you have been working with. The first is the Foundation for Post-Conflict Development. So if you can touch on what this foundation is and what your role was and the types of policy changes and developments that you helped to create.
Sure. So the Foundation for Post-Conflict Development is a nonprofit that works in developing countries that are emerging or recently emerged from conflict. And we really try to create sustainability in the communities where we work by partnering with people, locals in the community, and bringing their expertise and their resources to the table and combining that with some funding and some expertise that we can match it with in areas that they need it. So we did a number of different projects, and a lot of our work in East Timor, and that work has been around setting up maternity clinics in areas where access to healthcare, particularly for pregnant women, is really difficult. And so the maternity clinics just give them that space and access to the care that they need. We also help to support the Iraqi Women's Fellowship Foundation, and that was really an initiative to support female leaders in Iraq and helping them sort of be influential challenge drivers of change and people who are taking on challenges in their communities and really helping to put them in a position where they can move forward and address those. So helping them to partner with different organizations and also get the any sort of coaching and resources that they need to scale up and to become more sustainable.
That's amazing. And I love how you mentioned that it helps them to become more sustainable because, I mean, you know, there are organizations that help these women and people that need help, and the help that they provide can be temporary, but the fact that you're helping these people gain skills and help them with education to help them for their entire lifetime, I think, is very special. Now, something that I think that we've been talking about a lot in this conversation is the fact that human trafficking and other human rights issues, they do affect developing countries, they affect foreign countries, but they also affect the United States as well. And you had a very large role in Maryland. You were the deputy chair of the Maryland Human Trafficking Task Force. And I know that you helped to pass some very important very important policies within the state of Maryland, if you can talk about those.
Sure. So when I came on to the task force, you know, the issue was still relatively new, and we had a dedicated group of advocates who really, we all, you know, we wanted to get out this message. And it's still, you know, something that really isn't known everywhere, but we are doing the best to keep on, you know, getting that message out. So in that time in Maryland, human trafficking was actually a misdemeanor. And to me, that blew me away that you could sell someone and walk away with, you know, not even having a serious conviction on your record. And so we were able to change that, and so human trafficking is a felony in Maryland, and increased the penalties for trafficking. We also were able to get some legislation passed which allowed for resources to be given to survivors and have a special fund set up for survivors where any assets that were recovered from traffickers, for example, could be put into this fund so that that victim services could scale up. And another thing that we worked on was also getting signs posted in different languages at different areas, key areas where trafficking was known to occur. And that was just to provide victims with a hotline and give them access to some sort of support network if perhaps they were in a position where they were able to or wanted to reach out and get help.
That's terrific. You've worked in different countries through the Foundation for Post-Conflict Development. You worked to, once again, develop these policies in Maryland. You also have a background of working with United Nations. So you have a pretty good idea of the type of efforts towards human trafficking prevention domestically and internationally. So how do you believe policies in different states or different countries will continue to change and will need to change to focus on different human rights issues?
Well, one of the things that definitely needs to be addressed with trafficking is that there needs to be more of a focus on the integration of survivors back into the community and the services that they need to really cope and make that transition. There's such a lack of, first of all, shelters and care centers where victims can have the space to be in a safe environment where they can get rehabilitated. And that's a problem even here in the U.S. I mean, constantly what we struggle with when, you know, we are contacted by someone who, you know, who is with law enforcement or someone who has a victim in custody, they say, we need a bed for this person. We need a place where, you know, they can have shelter. And there are just not enough beds, not enough places to house victims. So that's something that really needs to be addressed. Also, just more of psychological services and counseling for victims, because the rehabilitation period, this is not something you get over in, you know, 10 days or a month or even a year. I mean, it can take several years of intensive therapy. And even still, I mean, a lot of times people don't realize, especially with younger victims, is that they have gaps in education. They never, you know, if they were taken out of the home, for example, they might not have ever learned how to create a bank account and how to save their money. And all of these things are really vital in terms of really moving on from the experience and moving on to the next phase of their life.
Absolutely. Now, Mary, before we go, you do a lot of work with empowerment. So what advice can you give to some of our young listeners?
Oh, my goodness. My young listeners. It is just so, so important for young listeners to be aware of the power that they possess in every aspect of how they live their life. And what I mean by that is the power in their words, the power in how they view themselves or don't view themselves, the power in the perceptions that they have of people with more money or less money or who look like they have it all together. Someone has it all together. And it's just so important that we be real with each other, that we don't increase the pressure on each other by comparing ourselves. Because honestly, we all have an innate beauty that no one can take from us. And that's not the message that we get from the 19th. It's not the message that we always get from our family and friends. But anything we can do to change that dialogue, like giving a compliment to our girlfriend or our mom or our brother. I mean, just ways that we can lift each other up instead of, you know, the back talk that sometimes happens when we're in competition or when we feel threatened. If there are ways that that we can really work against that and to just know that that there are people in people out there that want to help us to do that. So reach out to me, reach out to people that inspire you and connect with them because they have advice and they have encouragement that has pushed them forward and can push them forward too.
Great. All very important advice for our young listeners. And I think that's very important information for any other listener that's listening to the show and beyond as well. Mary, thank you so much for being a part of our program today. It was an absolute honor. And I think that the conversation that we had was extremely important.
Thank you so much. It's been so great to be part of your show.
Thank you. Now, once again, before we go, we want to repeat the number to call if you see a situation of human trafficking. The number is 1-888-373-7888. And again, to all of our listeners, be sure to connect with us by going to facebook.com/womeninvesting or on Twitter. You can use the hashtag womeninvest, hashtag girlsinvest, or hashtag WeForShe. Also connect with Mary and all of her work to try to end human trafficking and follow the Twitter account @freetobe or comment using the hashtag endprint. Now, thank you to all of our listeners for listening. You've been listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. The show is produced by the State of Women Radio Network, the first radio network for women and girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls with Michelle Jaffe. Download our shows on iTunes or listen on demand right here on thestateofwomen.com, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on delivering the latest trends in investing, entrepreneurship, and global women's issues by and for women and girls.